As the year closes out, we're in the midst of the quickest start to the flu season in nearly a decade. Influenza is influential this holiday season. I'm Jabalani LaFall, and on today's Central Standard, we examine the mechanics of immunizations for this flu season, what shots you should get, how they work, and also how these vaccinations affect some people physiologically, and the common reasons as to why some are reluctant to get them at all. Speaking of being sick, we tap into a different type of illness, the sick-to-death dapper threads of Negro League Baseball fashion. How the players used to dress up, and how the Negro League Baseball Museum and local men's boutique Method have teamed up for a cause that fits. We examine two different types of sickness. All ahead on Central Standard after this hour's NPR News. City. If you look at old Negro League game day pictures or take a visit to the museum in the 18th and Vine District, you'll see a sight beyond baseball that you won't see at any modern sporting event. The fans are in the stands, sure enough, but so are fedoras, ties, dress shirts, suspenders, Sunday dresses, bonnets, peacoats, fly stuff. The baseball fans of yesteryear looked really good. This is Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. And we're joined today by Bob Kendrick, president of the Negro League Baseball Museum. Good morning, Bob Kendrick, and welcome back.
Good morning, Jabalani. It's great to be back, man. Thanks for having me on.
Now, tell us how fashion and the Negro Leagues converge.
Oh, man, there was nothing recreational about a Negro Leagues game. It was the social event of the week. And so you went to those games looking good, or as they used to say, dressed to the nines. And oftentimes we were leaving church going straight to the ballpark. But it was a fashion statement. You know, you wanted to put your Sunday best on to go out anywhere. But and of course, that was the era of dress. So, you know, your grandmother and great grandfather, they didn't go anywhere without being dressed, but the ballpark was no exception, and they went looking good to cheer on their baseball heroes, and you didn't know who you might see there. You know, during that era of Negro Leagues baseball and that connection between jazz and baseball and all the great black entertainers out there, so you wanted to be looking good. I'm going to run into Lena Horne. I need to be looking my best for the horn.
There are obviously stories as well of pastors actually changing the service at their church to accommodate Negro League baseball games. So, of course, people came right out of the church dressed in their Sunday best.
Well, you know, early on, Jabalani, Negro Leagues baseball basically played their games on Sunday because Major League Baseball didn't play on Sundays during that era. And so the Negro League teams would rent the ballpark from the Major League team and play that Sunday doubleheader. And you're right. You know, I tell our visitors when they come to see us at the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum, black churches would indeed move their service time up an hour. Now, if you know anything about the black church, you don't mess with service time. 11 o'clock Sunday go to meeting. When the Monarchs were home, service started at 10 o'clock, and everybody left filing out, headed to that Sunday doubleheader looking good. And it was special. It really was a special time and a special place.
And, of course, local legend Buck O'Neill, who everybody knows as an impeccable dresser, talk fondly in Ken Burns' baseball documentary and elsewhere about the Sunday fashions at the Negro League games. What did you learn from him about style off the field?
I learned a lot. I learned a lot. I learned my hat etiquette from
hat
Buck.
Etiquette.
I learned my hat etiquette from Buck. You know, you put your straw hat on right after Easter. You take it off at Labor Day. And at Labor Day, you go back to your felt hat. And with them at the ballpark, they used to actually throw their straw hats on the field, you know, right after that Labor Day game. Now, I wouldn't go that far. That straw hat costs too much money now. But, you know, I always admired. Buck had an impeccable sense of style. And he talked so eloquently about the fact that when a young ball player would come up to join the Kansas City Monarchs, the first thing they would do would take him to the tailor, have Mac the tailor make him two suits. He'd sign for him, and then the young kid would go back and pay him after he got his first paycheck from the Monarchs. But style had always been a part of that. You never saw these guys outside the ballpark not dressed during that era. And most of their stuff was tailor-made. You know, so it fit. They, as you mentioned in your opening, they had the fedoras on. They had the nice top coats on, the suits, looking good all the time. And I think part of that was that pride that they wanted to exemplify as well, not only as ball players, but as men.
Talk about that ethos in dress versus today. Even in high school when we had away games, we were told to dress up and represent ourselves while traveling off the field, off the court, or whatever. But that ethos has sort of changed today.
It changed. And really, you go back historically, it started to change in Major League Baseball with Ted Williams. Ted Williams brought that Southern California flavor, you know, and so he had the button up, the shirt button down and the collar open and
the
that kind of thing.
Collar.
Exactly.
The San Diego style.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm. He brought that Southern California flavor to it, and then it started to get more and more casual as we went. The fans started to really mimic that same approach, and so the game got completely casual over time, and we've seen that kind of infiltrate itself through pretty much all sports. There are still some old-school coaches, though, that will have their players dress up in jacket, you know, at the very least have a jacket on for dinner and that kind of thing. But for the most part, we've seen that kind of waver through the years. But again, it was an integral part of Negro Leagues baseball, not just here in Kansas City, but league-wide.
How does that style legacy translate to you personally today? You brought your fedora in here in the studio today, brim very crispy. How does that translate to you?
You know, I think it was an innate part of my upbringing. I watched and mimicked my father and my older brothers. I'm the youngest of six, and my father was an outstanding dresser. You know, shoes always shined, and when he went out, always dressed. And so I think some of that spilled over. And so when I moved into my professional world, it was important for me to make sure that when I came calling on people that I tried to look professional. And that is something that I've tried to maintain. And again, being around the guys from the Negro Leagues has only just kind of made that entrenched even more in what I try to do. And as I certainly go out to represent the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum, we want to be as professional as we possibly can. And so, but fashion, dress has always been a big part of the Kendrick Men household for as long as I can remember.
Linking that relationship to the day, tell us about your relationship at the Negro League Baseball Museum with the local clothing boutique Method.
Man, those young guys are dynamic. I am so excited, number one, that I had an opportunity to meet them. Number two, that they had the foresight to become an official licensee of the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum, and that they've come up with a level of creativity that now looks beyond baseball caps, jerseys, that kind of stuff, which has always been a big part of what we've done at the museum from a licensed goods standpoint, and there will always be room in the marketplace for those kinds of things. But what they've done is completely flipped the script, so to speak. You know, they've kind of focused on the fashion aspect of black baseball and a dynamic line that they are creating right now that looks at jackets and dress shirts and ties, slacks and those kinds of things that really bring back that fashionable aspect of what Negro Leagues baseball was all about.
And, of course, knowing David Lloyd and Shamari Benton, who you're referring to, the proprietors of Method, they definitely admire old school men's fashion and sort of the dignity that the Negro Leagues espoused. How did that partnership with the clothing line come together? And then we can take that forward to the project you guys are working on.
Well,
now.
Number one, I gotta thank you for
formally
introducing us.
Sharp,
and things happen sometimes happenstance is the way these things come about. But after having met them and then walking them through the museum, and I know you've been through the museum a number of times, the fashion element jumps out at
you. It does.
I mean, you cannot miss the fact of how impeccably dressed these men and women were when they went to these games. And I think as they made their way through and they started to think about it, and obviously they're already big into fashion, high fashion, that more modern men look, they saw an opportunity to take the past and meld it with the present and give it that, you know, that Method twist that they add and that flavor that they bring to their clothing style and bring that out in their new Negro Leagues line.
And that's an interesting point that you bring up. in the 90s, in the early 90s, with Malcolm X coming out and this sort of black empowerment movement that sort of swept pop culture and black popular culture, the black college sweatshirts were very popular. And also, the Negro League franchise paraphernalia was also popular, too. How has that evolved from that? How has it evolved to now?
Well, we're seeing an evolution, and what, you know, fashion is so interesting. You know, if you got something, if you hold on to it long enough, it's going to come back. And it, as you mentioned, in the 90s and early 2000s, it was the Negro League jerseys, and they were bigger, and, you know, it had that urban street appeal to it. Now we're seeing this more modern fit and tailored kind of gear. And of course, what David and Shamari are working on at Method, again, takes that apparel aspect, you know, that more haberdashery flavor, you know, with dress up. You know, it's cool to be dressed up again. And I think that's that flair that they're bringing back with this new line. And that's why we're so excited about this new line.
They just like saying the word haberdashery.
It is kind of a cool word.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 FM KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm your host, Jabalani Lafar. Our guest is Bob Kendrick, president of the Negro League's Baseball Museum in the historic 18th and Vine District. We're talking about how Negro League baseball fashion off the field has inspired a local clothing line and served as the impetus for some charitable acts as well through a new program that I'll let him tell you about in a minute called Project Fly. So we won't wait a minute because that's an eternity in the radio world. So tell us about Project Fly.
Project Fly, I think, is one of the most creative, cause-related marketing initiatives that I've ever had a chance to be associated with. And I tip my cap to David and Shamari for this concept of linking history, fashion, and charity with this project where we're going to work with big brothers and big sisters to put kids in some of the gear that they are creating, some of the particularly the Wilkinson shirt, which is named for J.L. Wilkinson. It's important.
You have to tell us about J.L. Wilkinson to give us that background.
J.L. Wilkinson was the only white owner of the original eight Negro League franchises. Coincidentally, he owned
the Kansas City Monarchs. Right.
Buck O'Neill says that J.L. Wilkinson was the first white man he ever met that had absolutely no prejudice. Wilkinson made his entire living in black baseball. You know, Wilkinson didn't have a prejudice bone in his body. And Wilkinson was a 2,000 man in the 1900s because, number one, Wilkinson was comfortable in his own skin. So he had no trouble assimilating and being around those black and Hispanic players that, you know, for the most part, made up his great Kansas City Monarch team. And so he, you know, formed the Monarchs in 1920 when the Negro League started. And, of course, he built a model franchise. And so they saw a photograph of Wilkinson in the museum.
Interestingly enough, he was a sharp, crispy dresser.
Absolutely. He was a sharp dressed guy. And they saw a great photograph of him and a shirt that he was wearing. They recreated that piece to form what is now known as the Wilkinson. And we're going to provide that to young people who are affiliated with Big Brothers and Big Sisters. For people who make a donation of $50, it helps a young kid who's part of Big Brothers and Big Sisters get an opportunity to dress up. It's a beautiful shirt. I think the kids are really all excited about the prospect of getting this shirt. And we take for granted sometimes that these young people have these kinds of things, and they don't. And they never get to experience, you know, what it's like to dress up. And so through the great work of David and Shamari over at Method in partnership with the Negro League's Baseball Museum and Big Brothers and Big Sisters, we want to try and close that gap. And, you know, our goal is to put 100,000 kids in that Wilkinson shirt between now and the end of next year. That's ambitious, but we think we can do that.
Are you dealing with a specific age group of kids? And why is it important for those kids to know why they should dress up?
Well, I think these are the older kids. You know, these are those teenage kids who will be going out at some point in time and start the interviewing process. And that sense of pride and understanding and being able to connect that in a historical perspective. you know, relative to adversity and what do you do to overcome adversity. I think there's no greater example than that when we look at the Negro Leagues. And I tell people all the time, Jabulani, that our story is not about the adversity. It is about what they did to overcome the adversity. And so those young people, you know, it's so important as mentees that they have an opportunity to feel good, you know, to dress up, to be polished, to be able to be put in situations where they can communicate with people as they prepare to move on in life. And again, sometimes we take for granted that they have these basic skills and that they have these necessities that would allow them to be in that environment. They don't always have it. And so, again, I commend my guys over at Method, David and Shamari, for this brilliant idea. We are hopeful that this is going to take off like gangbusters and that we're going to put a lot of pieces in the hands of needy children so they feel good. They can dress up, look good. We take them back to the days that they were in the Negro Leagues, and they get to learn about the history of the Negro Leagues through that garment.
You have some local sports figures and celebrities that are also involved and have modeled some of these pieces. Who are they, and how do they get involved?
You know, we've got the young kids over at Sporting KC and, you know, other local celebrities, and we're adding to that roster. I think the more—
The rookie C.J. Sapong.
C.J. Sapong.
Rookie of the year in 2011.
Absolutely. Right. And he, I saw his shoot, and his modeling shoot was good. He's got a future in this thing. It, you know, if that soccer thing doesn't work, C.J. he's got a future in this modeling thing. And, you know, but we're excited to see the young athletes respond positively to this. I think they understand what this is all about. They also understand the influence that they have that can make a project like this be, you know, over the top successful.
But you also got somebody not particularly known for suits, but definitely known for repping KC, and that's Tech N9ne.
Tech N9ne.
The rapper Tech N9ne.
Absolutely. And, you know, again, Tech is someone that obviously that age group of kids that we're targeting, they know him. They know his music. And he is as philanthropic an individual as you will ever meet. And so we're excited to have CJ and Tech N9ne involved in this project and their efforts to give back to the community as well. And, you know, hopefully it will add an additional level of luster to this program that will help us reach that target goal, you know, 100,000 kids by 2013, December of 2013. And I think we can do that. You know, it just requires a $50 donation, and it is tax deductible. And you can help dress a child in this beautiful shirt. And if you want to see the Wilkinson shirt, you can just go to iprojectfly.com, and you can see the shirt. It's a beautiful dress shirt. You know, I can't wait to get mine.
We'll also have those details on kcur.org as well for you to check out Project Fly, Method Clothing, and the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum for more information on that. Tell us about how this fits into the overall mission of the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum as it is now, and how's the museum doing, and what you got coming up? Well, so that's a tall order.
It is a tall order, but that's okay. It's important for the museum. You know, when we look back historically at the Negro Leagues played such an important role in taking care of the community. And I think the museum has a social responsibility as well. You know, obviously, as a not-for-profit organization ourselves, we're out there pounding the pavement, trying to generate support as best we can so that we can carry forth our mission. But our mission is not just self-serving. You know, it's important that we take care of our community. It is important that our facility be used as a resource for the community and make as great an impact as we possibly can in helping change lives for the better. And so that has always been a part of our charge as an institution. It will always remain a part. That social responsibility is important for us to give back as well. And so if we can take this licensing effort and do good with it and impact the lives greatly of young people in need, I mean, that just makes it that much better. And I think and certainly hope that it validates the important role that this museum has. This is a wonderful institution. I hope that it also helps people understand that how forward-thinking we are. You know, it's important as a history museum that we go reach young people where they are. We don't sit back and wait for them to come to us. because they are very savvy. You know, they easily equate that that was then, this is now. You know, why does that apply to me? And we have to be able to do that. And we have to do that in creative ways. And I think this is one of those creative outlets. You mentioned how the museum is doing. The museum is doing really well. We're all working diligently to keep this museum moving and thriving and growing. And we had a great year. Our fiscal year, as we mentioned off air, runs July 1 through June 30th. So our fiscal year that just recently passed, we actually were in the black, and we're off to a great start in this current fiscal year.
And you mentioned that it ended June 30th, which was crucial because there was a lot of hoopla about the All-Star Game being in Kansas City this past summer. How did the impact of the All-Star Game being here and all the festivities there and the obvious connection to baseball help drive that message?
I mean, it was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. Timing is everything. And for the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum, the timing could not have been better for Kansas City to play host to the All-Star Game. And it had an amazing impact on our business. It was five unbelievable days of activity. We saw more people in the month of July than we've ever seen in the history of this museum. Our gift shop did more sales in the month of July than it's ever done in the history of this organization. The publicity in and around the museum was absolutely incredible. We were very fortunate, Jabalani, to be able to put 5 days of programming that was second to nobody in Kansas City. You know, we had Sharon Robinson, the daughter of Jackie Robinson, at the museum on that Saturday before the All-Star festivities. We had a conversation with Hank Aaron and Frank Robinson, hosted by Dave Winfield, on that Sunday prior to All-Star festivities. On Monday, it was Lou Brock talking about the art of base stealing. And we followed that up with a guy that people might know, Tony Gwynn, and the art of hitting. And it was a proverbial who's who as Matt Kemp brought his family to the museum, Steve Garvey and his wife, and Dave Stewart. I mean, everywhere you looked around, it was just star-studded. It was awesome. People were really, you know, they came out to experience this.
It seems to me that unlike any other sport, the black players in the sport, the modern black players, at least the players from that era that you mentioned, Tony Gwynn,
yeah,
Lou Brock,
yes,
have a reference and reverence,
yes,
to what happened,
yes,
in this league.
Yeah,
talk about that.
They understand that they are the benefactors of those who made great sacrifice to not only make this game better, but to make our country better. So there is certainly a level of great respect. And when you, that era of ball player has had an opportunity to meet a number of these Negro League players, they are probably more in tune to the history of the game itself, and certainly their history and their role in the game. And they understand that it all starts in the Negro Leagues. Had it not been for the Negro Leagues, there would not have been a Jackie Robinson. And you certainly believe that the game would have been integrated at some point in time, but how long? How long would it have taken had they not been able to discover Jackie Robinson here in Kansas City in 1945?
And speaking of Jackie Robinson, there's a movie coming out soon with Harrison Ford starring as Branch Rickey, the general manager of the Brooklyn Dodgers, that was instrumental in the integration of the,
yeah,
Major League Baseball,
yeah,
using Jackie Robinson. Talk about your role in that and maybe any promotional stuff you're going to do around that.
Well, the film is called 42. It is scheduled for
his number, by the way.
It was his number with
his
the Brooklyn
number.
Dodgers.
Yeah.
It is scheduled to be released in April, right around April 12th, April 13th. Of course, Jackie Robinson Day is April 15th, you know, across Major League Baseball. And the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum is preparing. We will honor the great country music star Charlie Pride,
wow,
who is the recipient of the Jackie Robinson Lifetime Achievement Award. And for those who might be questioning why in the world are we honoring Charlie Pride,
well, he did for country what Jackie Robinson did for baseball.
Well, and Charlie also played in the Negro Leagues.
Wow.
Charlie was a good pitcher in the Negro Leagues with the Memphis Red Sox and the Birmingham Black Barons, and was actually drafted into the New York Yankees farm system before he hurt his arm. And then, of course, after he hurt his arm, he went to country music. He was always, as Buck would say, picking his guitar on the bus. You know, in an era of jazz, he was making country sounds when, you know, during that era. But you're right. His pioneering role in country music, his ties to black baseball makes him an exemplary choice to receive the Jackie Robinson Lifetime Achievement Award. And we'll do something, we'll present that to Charlie in April of next year.
Our guest is Bob Kendrick, president of the Negro League's Baseball Museum in the historic 18th and Vine District. We were talking about how Negro League baseball fashion on and off the field is inspiring a local clothing line and serving as the impetus for some charitable acts, as well as some things coming up at the Negro League Baseball Museum in January and April and 2013. Bob Kendrick, thank you for coming.
Thanks for having me.
And we're going to take a quick break. When we return, it's flu season, and we're going to take a shot, see what I did there, at answering some questions about vaccinations and why flu season is the strongest in almost a decade. Central Standard returns in just a moment.